Last week, for those of you who were here, I preached about James Luther Adams and his five smooth stones of liberalism. And for those of you who weren't here, don't worry, you don't have to go back and read that sermon, because the Cliff Notes are on the cover of the bag you should have gotten as you came in. And if you didn't, we have more, and somebody will bring them to you. Raise your hand and we'll get you a bag. James Luther Adams was a minister, a Unitarian parish minister, a social ethicist, a theologian, and a professor. And he created these five stones to give voice to what our liberal faith held at its core. And he named them the five smooth stones to reference a very famous biblical story, David and Goliath. JLA, as he was called, was writing in a day when everybody assumed that most everybody was Christian. And if they weren't, they were part of the larger Judeo-Christian heritage. They all assumed that everyone knew those Bible stories. And he hoped that by using that phrase, the five smooth stones, he would make it clear to all the liberals who heard him that our faith had as much power and strength and truth as the faiths in the Bible. Adams needs some translating for a time where many folks genuinely do take a secular option and find their way into rooms like this with no tradition of Bible study at all, and with a group of people who know that somehow they too need to become citizens of a multicultural world. The five smooth stones may not have the same power they once did, but they still are good ways of describing our faith. And I wanted to bring them up again this week because one stone, the fifth stone, has been giving me much trouble of late. Now, on your little Cliff Notes, the fifth stone says, live in hope. I mean, it's a pretty simple, pretty religious thing to say, right? Be hopeful. And for me lately, that has grown increasingly hard. David and Goliath, I feel really small. And of all the other stones that Adams had, this one seems to have grown tiny in the last few months. It's as if Goliaths are getting bigger, 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 as if I am getting smaller all along. Now, I had thought that maybe this was just a byproduct of aging. I mean, my father keeps telling me you lose inches as you get older. And maybe it's not that the Goliaths have changed. Maybe it's just me who's starting to shrink. It's possible. But when I look around here, I see elders who may not be quite as flexible as they once were, whose knees actually do creak, whose bodies move a little slower, and I see a wisdom and power shining out of their eyes. They haven't shrunk at all. So me, at 58, it can't be that I'm shrinking. It must be something I have lost. And so I went back this summer in my reading to James Luther Adams and wondered, what was it that had gone? What was it it was making me feel like that fifth stone was shrinking down to pebble size. What was it that was making me feel like this guy? Been there, done that. Leave it to the next crowd to carry on. Does anybody else in this room know what I'm talking about? And so for a while, feeling like this, I actually came to feel quite sad and a bit ashamed as I thought of the elders in this congregation and in all the congregations I've known. They're not people who live like that. And they're not people. Living like that is not what I want to be. So I listened to Adams again. Now, he was a professor and a philosopher, and he didn't write pithy sayings like live in hope. This is his fifth stone. In his words, liberalism holds that the resources, divine and human, that are available for the achievement of meaningful change justify an attitude of ultimate optimism. Now, with philosophers, like with poets, every word counts. And to get what he's saying, you gotta spend some time with each phrase. So let me do that. Ultimate optimism. There's something about this one sentence that lets you know that this isn't a felt response to life. That Adams isn't really talking about being lighthearted or having a can-do spirit or looking just on the bright side. He's talking about something else. In fact, for him, ultimate optimism is a conclusion based in knowledge and discernment, in study and reason. And what he studied is the world around him, those divine and human resources that he finds. Now, I know you all pretty well, and I know that for most of us, those human resources useful for change are things we understand. It's our friends who come and help us when our hearts are low, who remind us that, yeah, we can. If it seems hard right now, maybe it's just because we're overwrought or tired, and they offer shelter to our hearts. And when we've taken enough, we actually do feel better. The obstacles may not have changed, but we've got more to face them with, and life moves on. Or maybe those human resources are the history of folks who have done brave and courageous things, a history we all know and feel and can tell. Maybe those human resources are just the model, the mentoring of other people who sit in the pews right next to us. People who do family promise and bring in food for the pantry and go to peace and care about things and take part in all sorts of actions and movements and ways of bettering themselves. And sometimes all of us get a little discouraged, a little disheartened, and then we come in here and somehow somebody else bucks us up. We remember there is a possibility for change, and that is a reason for hope. And we go out of here feeling a little stronger and surer on our own. But I do think, for us UUs, that other beginning word in that sentence causes us a little trouble. Those divine resources for meaningful change. Now, Adams grew up as a fundamental Baptist, and although he left the faith of his childhood in college, he never seems to have left behind a confidence in a transcendent reality that he could call God or call divine. I, on the other hand, grew up UU. I know that as a large group, we are positive, active, and all a little allergic to that word, God. We're not quite sure. There's a tender spot, a touchiness, whenever it comes up. And so for us, this claim that our faith holds divine resources at its core may be more troublesome than we want to let on. At least it was for me. And when it was, I spent a lot of time doing what I thought ministers were supposed to do when they reached that kind of challenge to their faith. I spent a lot more time on the cushion. I spent a lot more time doing much more elaborate, hard-to-remember spiritual practices. I mean, even with an index card, I couldn't get them right. I thought it would help. It is always a joy to do that kind of stuff. I'm enough of an introvert. It's loads of fun. It did not make my pebble grow. What did was reading in Science. It was evolutionary biology and neuroscience that changed my heart. Let me try and do this quick and not. Evolutionary biology to me says we are animals like everyone else. Frogs and dolphins and elephants and gorillas and me and you all started in the same soup. We are not some special species with a creation date all our own. We're part of a whole. And over time, that whole has been evolving and changing and moving forward. We, to use an old theologian's language, are but the eyes and ears and hands of God. To use a scientist's jargon, we're evolution itself. Neuroscience says our brains are plastic, that as we think and learn and experience, we actually change the neurology in our heads. And when we pass those experiences on, when we create new social structures, different forms of education, different ways of relating to folks who are young or growing or needing to be healed, we change their brains as well. For me, those two ideas have made all the difference. Because it seems to me that all the things that made me feel like Goliaths are large. All the realities of our lives, from sea level rise to climate change, to the troubles out in the world, to our own Congress that can't seem to do anything at all, to a government that is so frightened it's spying on its own. All these troubles really aren't evils we have to fight. They're names for what we need to evolve beyond. Now, that shift, to see it from a struggle to an evolution, may not mean a whole lot to you, and that's fine. Because the divine resources that I come to meet need not be yours. Your path is only your own. But I think what Adams is saying to all of us is that each of us must look for a transcendent reality we can have confidence in. And when we find it, we must trust it and follow it till we know what it has to teach. Maybe for you, it's also science, but maybe not. Maybe it's the concert hall. Maybe it's social justice work. Maybe it's sitting in the quiet of prayer. Maybe it's the arms of another. It doesn't matter which. What matters most is that you find it, respect it, trust it, and hear what it has to say. I believe that if each of us can do that, each of us will take whatever pebble of hope we feel and find that it again is a great, hefty stone. Good to fit in whatever slingshots we hold. Good to change the world we face. Find your own stone. Have the courage to share what you have found with each other. And I have no doubt that every one of us will be stronger for it. And together, we will be able to give those kids and the ones who come after them a hope that is clear and true and solid. A hope that shines out in our faces and through our lives. We do that, there's no Goliath we need to fear.